The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
I am coming to you live from Parnell Square in Dublin's inner city. The reason I am here is because 6 months ago, to the day, this place was a hive of activity for all the wrong reasons. We had that devastating attack on a schoolgirl just around the corner here. And of course, that was simply the first act in a story that played out across the afternoon and into the evening. Ultimately, it saw buses burned out, it saw Lewis's burned out, it saw Gardaí attacked, it saw shops looted. This is how it was reported at the time.
Five people, including three children, have been taken to hospital following a stabbing incident outside a school in Dublin city centre.
Good evening, Andrea Gilligan here with a News Talk news special following the violence in Dublin city centre tonight.
The Association of Garda Sergeants and Inspectors has severely condemned the violence and what it described as the thuggish scenes displayed tonight in Dublin city centre.
Those involved brought shame on Dublin, brought shame on Ireland, and brought shame on their families and themselves.
But we're going to have a fundamental review of our public order tactics, given the amount of violence directed towards citizens, members of Garda Síochána, but also the community.
It's 7 o'clock, good morning. Calm has been restored to Dublin city centre after rioting on the streets last night. Gardaí have branded the violence as gratuitous thuggery after public transport was attacked, Garda vehicles damaged and some businesses looted.
Yeah, that was just some of the sounds of that night, that day, 6 months ago and the days following. With me now is Caio Benicio. Caio, of course, would be known to many of you. He's running in the upcoming local elections for Fianna Fáil. But he was a central player in the very first part of that day's events, that awful, awful stabbing just around the corner from us on Parnell Square. Caio, thank you for joining us here today on the show. Can you talk me through just your experience, kind of from start to finish, like how you came across the attack, what you saw, and how you responded?
Yeah, I was working as a delivery driver. It was a normal day. I was passing by on Parnell Square. First, I thought it was like a drunk guy, like a normal fight. So I work in the street all day long, so I see many things like that. But I realized there was a little girl involved and a man was with a knife. So I stopped my bike straight away and I just remember some flash, you know, I have the idea to take off my helmet and I hit him and he fell on the ground. That's what I remember. And yeah, it was.
So there wasn't a kind of a period of thinking about what, it was also all instinct. You just saw the knife, take off the helmet and
instinct,
swing it.
You know, yeah, I didn't even think about my risk. I didn't think about to be a brave or something like that. It was everything by instinct.
Can you, and I think we have to be conscious of respecting the kind of the dignity and the privacy of the girl who was attacked, but can you maybe describe the scene to us?
Yes, for me, the little girl to be alive, it's a miracle, because I saw she was on the street very badly. I keep in touch with the parents and they want privacy. And yes, she's a little warrior and she's still fighting for, and I'm praying for she have 100% recover.
What effect did that day have on you? And I don't mean in terms of this type of stuff, you know what I mean? And being asked about it and the publicity, but it must have some emotional impact. You know, all that adrenaline in your body and everything, even at the time, there must be a come down.
Yeah, I was in complete shock for 3 nights. I couldn't sleep at all. After the riot, the same night and the next day, so I was the guy on the newspaper that was another immigrant to help. And my action was very meaningful, so I realized the next days that meeting people on the street, you know, there was one guy said to me, he got a daughter and she, just before that, she asked him to not tell anyone she was Brazilian. and the dad was very sad inside, but respect, you know, the girl was 12 years old, a teenager. And after that, the girl said to him that she wants to everyone knows she's Brazilian. And that feeling is something that money cannot buy. And I realized that my action was very meaningful for many, many people.
So, I mean, today, when you find yourself in this part of the city, and there'll be people listening to this at home, and maybe they've, very few of them will ever experience anything like that, but maybe they've been on the scene or the aftermath of a traffic accident, and it never fails to resurface when they pass that point on the road, as it were. I mean, what how does it affect you traveling down Parnell Square today?
Yeah, it's tough. It's very tough because you remember that night, and the flash is still in my mind, and it still does.
And I suspect it probably will for a long time to come.
Yeah, but it's something that I have to deal with, you know, I have to carry on.
Caio, thank you very, very much for joining us here on the show.
Thanks a lot.
Siobhan Carney is with me as well, because Siobhan, you also found yourself, to a degree, I mean, centrally involved in that awful, awful incident. So maybe explain how it is you came to be in this part of the city on the day.
Okay. Well, I was attending the Stardust inquest that started the April of the year. And my brother Liam was the last victim to die, who was unlawfully killed in the Stardust fire. So we were attending it, and that particular day, the coroner had given us a half-hour lunch break. So I was standing outside with the girls, just about to resume into court, when I heard a scream, and I looked across the road, and I seen a knife. And I followed the knife, because I'm a chef, so it was very blatantly obvious what was happening, and I just took across the road.
Can you remember what was going through your mind when you ran across that road?
I was screaming, he's stabbing the children, and Claire O'Connor came on my left-hand side, and I was able to shout at her to get the children away because they were still jarred into the railings.
And again, as I said to Kyle, kind of respecting the privacy and the dignity of the children and that girl in particular who was injured, can you maybe describe the scene that you saw when you crossed the road?
Well, it was quite chaotic. When I ran across the road, I jumped to grab the man by the collar, and Warren Donoghue had gotten him to the ground, and the knife fell. And I kicked the knife away. And I later found out the French guy, Emmanuel, hid the knife. I said, get the knife away. And he put it away across the road. And a lovely young man on a cycling bike stood over the knife till the Garda came.
And while all this was going on, I mean, had you a fear for your own safety or the safety of anyone else?
After the man fell to the ground, I heard the vibration and I knew he wasn't going to move anywhere, and people were starting to get very angry.
Yeah.
So me and another lady formed a ring around, because there were still children and elderly people on the street, and it's not what happens in Dublin, people getting kicked to death on the streets, not in my lifetime. As unprecedented as children being attacked on a street is unprecedented in my lifetime. So I was shouting at them to keep away. We're not savages, but I was shouting to get the children into the school, you know. So Claire had gotten some of the children away, and some of the teachers, that I presume were the teachers, were just standing there frozen in terror. But as I clenched hands with the girl, I was watching everybody's hands to see, was this a terrorist attack? Because I thought there might be another attack to come. But of course, we were terrorized.
Yeah.
But I thought it was going to be worse, like what you've seen in France.
Yeah.
Countries like that. Because at that stage, everything was going through your mind, you know. And then, obviously, the ambulance came, and they came down to me, And I said, no, the children are in the school. So they went up to them. And then the police came in, the police in the blue, the whole guns. And I just raised my hand and said, weapon. And I walked across and gave my details and I left the city then.
And as you're leaving the scene, Siobhan, like, again, and I made this point to Kyle, like, all that adrenaline that's coursing through your body.
So as I got around here, the children's parents were arriving. And, you know, I was up at the Stardust and it reminded me so much of that night in Frankton, wondering, was it their children that were stabbed? And looking at the men, the worried, the women crying. It was horrendous, you know, because it had all been blocked off at that stage. And we had gone back into the courtroom through the pillar rooms and came out through the rotunda and around here.
What impact does it have on you today, Siobhan?
Well, I'm not the same person.
Really?
I'm not the same person I was. My hands shake. My hands never shook. I was out of work for 6 weeks because I'm a chef. I couldn't look at knives. It changed my awareness of everything. And plus, I have a 9-year-old granddaughter that is in school in this city. And yeah, I do worry.
And what about in a day like today now, where, you know, we've asked you to come back here just around the corner from where all of that happened?
Well, I had to come back in on that Monday because the coroner was sitting again.
Yeah.
And I felt if I did not come back into the city, I would not come back into it.
Ever.
And I would never be defeated by terrorism or bulliness or riots or anything, because Dublin is a great city.
Siobhan, thank you so, so much for speaking
welcome.
To us today. Siobhan Carney, we heard from Caio Benicio before her. Of course, Siobhan mentions the riots that formed the aftermath of that awful, awful attack that she witnessed here on Parnell Square. After the break, we're going to talk to the Lord Mayor, Dáithí Do Raochta, and others about those riots, about how the city responded, and about how the city continues to respond and hopes to respond into the future. So lots more still to come. With me now is Dáithí Do Raochta. He is the Lord Mayor of Dublin. Dáithí, you're welcome to the show and thanks for joining us here.
Thanks, Karen.
Can you talk us through your experience of that day? Maybe from, you know, we talked, like I say, before the break, a lot about the stabbing, that awful, awful attack that kind of precipitated the night's events. But from that point on, how did things unfold from your point of view and your office's point of view?
Well, I suppose for me, like the 23rd of November, we saw the very, very worst of Dublin and we also saw the very, very best of Dublin. For myself, that awful incident happened. We knew that. I was actually on my way to an event and I saw a Dublin Fire Brigade ambulance coming up O'Connell Street, and I remarked to Leo, who was with me at the time, I said, that looks serious. Like, you can tell the difference when an ambulance is really going full pelt and it's going to something. And we kind of saw something was wrong. And as I said, I was on my way to an event. I was over at the Blair Willis factory talking about housing, and we were going in to meet a lot of people, and then my phone lit up like a Christmas tree. The city manager, chief fire officer, ringing me saying, we have a very serious incident unfolding here up at Parnell Square. And from that, it was straight back to the Mansion House, and obviously from a city council perspective, coordinating. So, like, I was getting reports, Dublin Fire Brigade were literally around the corner, so there was 25 advanced paramedics on the scene within 2.5 minutes, which was pure luck, you know. And when I said, so Ciarán, we obviously had that, we had reports in terms of where we were going, the incident, what was happening, and it's all breaking news like it always is at that kind of thing. But then as we kind of went into the early evening, you were starting to see what was starting to pop out, and I was starting to get calls, and we did some media and we were talking, you know, that kind of, people need to remain calm and people need to, you know, there was a worry about what was going to happen that day.
Yeah.
So we cancelled all our events and what was going on. And then just to see what unfolded that evening in terms of where the city went and how it went. And when we look at kind of the Dublin buses, I mean, I think it was 4 Dublin buses that were burned, another 6 were severely damaged and attacked. You're looking at Lewis was burnt out, and I think it was 17 Garda vehicles that were attacked that night. And as I said, we saw the very, very worst. And a point I make is, at a time when we had first responders on the scene, we had people from the Rotunda, National Ambulance Service, the Guards, Dublin Fire Brigade, they were on scene dealing with three young kids in their care are having been viciously attacked on the streets of our city, and at a time when they should have been afforded the space to go and compress and speak to somebody for what they were dealing with that day. Instead, people on the streets of our Dublin attacked our frontline emergency services, and that disgusted me. That wasn't good enough, you know. These were people, as I said, that responded as quickly as they possibly could, that saved lives on the side of that road that day. And a couple of hours later, they're being burnt out of vehicles. Some of the Dublin Fire Brigade workers that were in the Fire Brigade that day, that following evening, they were attacked and the first front window of the fire engine was smashed. You know, and that's the contrast. And that's the darkest of what I believe we saw that day. It really, really was. But then I think we also saw the best of our city, both as we started to come together, where people weren't happy what that was. From a Dublin City Council perspective, we had a big job on our hands in order to restore confidence in the city, but also to clean up the remnants of what was the riot and what was the burning. So there was lots of meetings that went on very late into the early hours of the evening, and it was about, I think it was about 2:30 in the morning, the guards said, right, you can come in from 3:00. And I think we really, really saw the best of our city in terms of all the Dublin City Council workers that had based themselves out from the time of the riot out in the depot, knowing we need to be on response to get back in to clean up our city. And the big thing we wanted to do was, we wanted a big operation to get in to clean up the city, so when people were coming in the following morning, they didn't see the remnants of the riot. And you know, that gave me the greatest pride to see the council staff get in, and by 9:00 in the morning, 85% of it was done. I was down here from about 5 a.m. that morning, and to see the smouldering on the ground, you know, the smells. It's the smell that stuck with me, whether it was the smell around the Lewis and the smell, there was also a bus burnt out down just off O'Connell Bridge.
Yeah, it's just an acrid smell.
That you know, that burning smell, and that sits with you, that hangs, you know. But as I said, to see the DCC workers get in, get it cleaned up, the only thing then that was outstanding was the Lewis was removed about 12 o'clock that day and it was taken away. But in the main, like speaking to people and being on O'Connell Street, people were coming to work going, oh wow, you've done such a good job. We were expecting to see Armageddon in here and the city's here. And then of course we had a big responsibility in order to build an operation to restore confidence in our city. So I think I remember the fact at the time was 38% of all trade was done in the that window, in that pre-Christmas window. So 38% of the yearly trade.
Yes.
So that's rates, that's businesses, that's jobs, that's people's livelihoods, and we needed to restore. Yeah. So we had a big I Believe in Dublin campaign afterwards.
We're going to be talking to a couple of business owners actually from this part of the world, from One Society, the cafe up around the corner, and a few others in a few minutes' time. You know, it's interesting you're describing kind of, I guess, the crisis mode everyone goes into and they respond accordingly, and it's, I guess, it's a manifestation the professionalism of all of those emergency services and responders you mentioned. On some level, was there a point at which, maybe it was a day later, a couple of days later, did you decompress and you went, my God, like, what did we just deal with?
In fairness, it probably took a couple of weeks, because we went from the immediate crisis of what happened that afternoon and what happened that evening to, we had a window between then and Christmas where we needed to get confidence in our city. So as I said, that I Believe in Dublin campaign, you know, bringing traders together, our retailers together, working with Dublin Town, the bids, Dublin City Council. And that meant, like, from those weekends we were putting, so the Friday and the Saturday, you know, it just fell off a cliff. Sunday we saw a small little response. So then we had lots of meetings kind of Monday to Friday to make sure the following weekend had a big bump. And that included things like pop-up jazz bands, pop-up, we'd people around the streets giving out chocolates. We'd got people on Henry Street, you know, taking pictures, people walking around as Iron Man, that kind of thing. But then what I had to go in the same run of that was the whole idea of the wider city perspective. So reinstall or putting back together the city coordination office. And we won't get into task forces and stuff like
that. No, we'll talk about that maybe later.
As part of the city coordination office, bringing on Garda Síochána, bringing the NTA, the Restaurants Association, the Vintners, Dublin Town, Fáilte Ireland, Dublin City Council, all around the table to start planning how you know, we build our city.
Yeah, well, listen, like I say, we're going to catch up with some of those businesses. Richard Guiney, who's the CEO of Dublin Town. I think he's been at the first meeting of the aforementioned task force as well. So we might talk to him about that in a few minutes' time. Dáithí de Rocha, Lord Mayor of Dublin. Dáithí, thanks a million for speaking to
us. Thanks, Ciarán.
Noel Wardick is with me. He's the CEO from Dublin City Community Cooperative. Noel, the aftermath of all of this, everything we've just been hearing from Dáithí and from Sayo and Siobhan before the ad break as well, I mean, what it did in the days afterwards was focus a light focused attention on this area, kind of for all the wrong reasons again, some might say. Give people a sense, people who don't know Dublin well or don't know this part of Dublin well, about the issues and the challenges they faced here.
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, we were obviously shocked, like everyone else in the country, about what happened on November the 23rd. However, like, we would have predicted trouble at some point in time. We know we've been sitting on a tinderbox for many, many, many months here in Dublin City, a city that we're very proud of, proud to work in, proud to live in, proud to be part of. But we have been issuing warnings about growing tensions, the impact of endemic poverty, neglect and disadvantage, and ignoring deep-rooted problems for many, many years. So for us, the surprise was that it happened on that particular day. Mm. Obviously horrified by the stabbings and the attack in the school, but the fact that there was an explosion of some sorts was not a surprise.
So explain that to me, why you felt you were on a kind of a tinderbox at that particular point in time, given, as you say, these challenges have been going on for years.
Well, particularly what has been probably a tipping point over the last number of months, maybe the last year or so, has been the issue of the far right and the protests and the venom and the hostility and the sheer nastiness and aggression of those protests that we were witnessing, not just here in the heart of the city, but also in other parts of Finglas and places like that, like, where, I mean, the sheer brazenness of some of those protests and the anger and brutality and language used right up to Gardaí, to immigrants. So we just knew that if there was an appropriate set of circumstances, appropriate inverted commas, that things could get really out of hand. And we were very, very worried that that's what would happen, and that there was, these people were looking for an excuse to mobilise, so to speak, around an issue and cause as much mayhem as possible. And it happened.
And nobody could have foreseen the stabbing and how that happened and the way it played out. But how did you imagine it was going to happen? Did you imagine it was going to be around maybe kind of the housing of refugees? We'd seen arson attacks. Is that what you kind of thought might spiral out of control?
Yeah, we thought it possibly over a protest at a centre. We'd seen violence at some of the centres anyway, you know, small scale, if you can call it that, where it was contained. So we figured that if there was an opportunity to really light a blaze, then that could happen. And obviously the tragic stabbing on the day, and it's very sad to say, once we heard about the stabbing on that day, we sort of wished and hoped, and this sounds like a crazy thing to say, that it was a white Irish man that did it. So that's how fearful we were about the tinderbox situation. Once we heard it was an Irish citizen, albeit a naturalized citizen originally from Algeria, we knew by 2 or 3 we were in for a very, very worrying evening ahead, whereby we would have advised our staff here, because we work in the city and the heart of the city, to it was probably best to go home and stay at home and not to go into the city that night. We didn't know what was going to happen, but we could see all the social media posts from the far right guys, and the sort of terrifying messages like, let's go hunting migrants, let's go find migrants, let's go hunting immigrants. I mean, the language was beyond terrifying. So, and we knew that wasn't hot air talk.
And having said that, I mean, all of the people who protested and who looted and burned things, they weren't all kind of far right agitators. So, I mean, was it just that there were kind of opportunists? There were people who were just kind of allowing kind of years of frustration spill over? I mean, how do you kind of assess that?
Yeah, I mean, there's an element of clearly of opportunism there. And again, it's important to point out that many people involved in the riots weren't even from the inner city and the north inner city, which unfortunately, was portrayed very negatively post the riots, which is a terrible injustice to the brilliant communities that live here, the diverse communities that live here, to the welcome that foreign nationals are shown here in the inner city. So there's an element of opportunism to a certain degree, yes, but that's how far right mobilisation works. It works on disadvantage, and it works on mobilising people who are angry. And then when an opportunity arises, far right can mobilise. That's how most riots happen in most countries.
Despite all of that and the expectation that something was going to happen and sending staff home, you were probably still surprised to see the level it reached, were you? Like, in terms of, Lewis's being burned down.
No, absolutely. We were terrified and shocked and deeply upset. I mean, you have to remember, thousands and thousands of people, this is their home. For many Irish people, the city is where they go shopping, yes, or they go to work. But for thousands of people, this is their home. This is their patch. This is where they take their kids to school.
Can I cut across you there?
Yeah, sure.
But it's just, we often talk about perceptions of the North Inner City from the point of view of people coming into the inner city from the outside. You know what I mean? That's the mindset. And just as you say that, I'm struck, like, what are the perceptions of the North Inner City from all of those people who live here in terms of safety and everything else?
Well, first of all, people who live in the inner city are proud of the fact that they live in the inner city. I mean, if you look at the demographic makeup of the inner city now, it is without a shadow of a doubt probably the most diverse multicultural communities across the country. And that's normal. So it's not a shock. So when we watch protests around the country, it's with some bemusement, because here the schools are multicultural, the youth clubs are multicultural, the soccer teams are multicultural. So there's been a huge welcoming here, and as the demographics has changed over the years. So it's a great place to live, and obviously there's problems, there's huge neglect, but it's despite the disadvantage and despite the neglect and despite the fact that the state has failed these communities over many years, that these people still thrive and welcome new communities. But yeah, there was heartbreak here by what happened, and heartbreak as well in particular at how the area was portrayed, Ciarán. I mean, when we have happy events in the city centre, St. Patrick's Day parades, 1916 rising celebrations, they take place in the city centre, in O'Connell Street, on Henry Street. When there's a riot, it takes place in the North Inner City and the Inner City. And I suppose we would caution everybody, yourselves and the media, to be very careful about how you characterise or portray the city. So positive events, it's O'Connell Street, the city centre, our capital. Negative events, lo and behold, it's suddenly the Inner City. And that's a dangerous narrative and very unfair to the people who make this community great, despite the neglect that the state has shown here for, as I say, for decades.
Yeah, well, listen, language matters in every context, no less than anywhere else. We're going to talk in a few minutes' time about the impact on business here, a little bit about the task force as well, that I know some kind of hope it might turn ships around. Others maybe have a more jaundiced or jaded view. In the meantime, listen, thank you so much for your time. That was Noel Wardick. Noel is the CEO from the Dublin City Community Cooperative. Stay with us, back in a moment. We spoke a little bit earlier in the show to some of those who were eyewitnesses. They were on the scene of that awful, awful stabbing. And we spoke to the Lord Mayor, Dáithí Do Rochta, about how the rest of the evening's events unfolded. And we got a sense of kind of the continued challenges of deprivation and the likes in Dublin's North Inner City. There was an impact on business as well, of course, and with me to discuss is Will Monaghan. He's the owner of One Society restaurant here on Gardiner Street, and Richard Guiney is the CEO of Dublin Town. You're both very welcome, and thanks a million for joining us, lads. Will, we're here in One Society, just for the benefit of people at home. Can you give us a sense of how the events of that day impacted you guys?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, historically, this area was always considered a bit of a risky one, and you know, Dublin City has worked a lot in changing that. And it's, you know, it's a great area, and we love working here. But after that day, the perception of the area is it's just dangerous. And that's that's kind of the reality we were faced with. Now, it isn't that, but unfortunately, that's the way it's perceived. The reality is we don't see a lot of boots on the ground in terms of the guards. There's not enough resources put into the area to fix some of the antisocial problems that the area has. And our business has been affected a lot because of that. The reality is we nearly went out of business in January. We were very close to not making it through, we'll say, to the busy season, which we're supposed to be in now. Although, as you can see, we're actually only about half full and it's lunchtime. So whether we make it through winter is another thing. If we do nothing, we will not make it through another winter. And that's the reality we have here. We just need more business in the area, and we need more done to make the area feel safer, look safer, and have a better atmosphere. For instance, Bruce Springsteen here last Sunday, the atmosphere is unbelievable. There was a good feel, vibe in the area. Everyone was happy. That's what we need, and we need more of that, because it's a great area and it just needs a little bit more focus, a little bit more love from the powers that be.
So, I mean, some of the problems you mentioned, they're not new. They didn't kind of come about after the riots. They've kind of been lingering in this area for, well, decades, if we're being honest about it. The issues around kind of a lack of Gardaí and all of that, I'm sure hybrid working, while great for some, is not always great for businesses like yourselves in the city. I mean, to what extent do you kind of point the finger of blame at this day 6 months ago in terms of perceptions, and it may be kind of ramping up the perception that already existed?
Look, it's not a Dublin One problem. Dublin One is like the bold school child, you know, he gets all the bad attention, but he doesn't get the resources to fix the problem. It's a Dublin problem. It's not a Dublin One problem, it's a Dublin problem. This area is just like any other area, just a little bit more amplified. But with that amplification, you need more support and you need more people focusing on fixing the problem and fixing the perception. This is a great area, it's just we need more love. So let's just get through and push on and get some resources put in place.
Richard Guiney, I mentioned, the CEO of Dublin Town, is with us as well. And Richard, I'm keen that we do focus on where we go from here and improving things. So before we get to that, I mean, just kind of as somebody representing maybe kind of businesses in a broader sense in this part of the city and beyond, talk me through your experience of this day 6 months ago and the aftermath from a business point of view.
Yeah, look, it was a very unpleasant experience, I have to say, and one that I didn't think we'd ever see in Dublin. So that night was, you know, was very scary. But I think, you know, even as that night was progressing, we were seeing the best of Dublin coming together. There was a tremendous interaction between the guards, business people, workers who were still in the city. And the next morning, I think there was a real determination that we were going to bounce back from this. And it was obviously a really important time of the year. It's the time of the year when businesses will do about a third of their annual turnover. So I think the reaction was very quick. We had, you know, the government, we had the local authority, we had Fáilte Ireann, we had the Gardaí, business community, all on the one page. And actually, the footfall in December was up just under 2% on the 2022 levels. I certainly wasn't expecting that on the 23rd of November. So I think it showed that, you know, when we really do focus our minds, that we can actually, you know, we can do a lot of good stuff. And the other thing that came out of it was that, you know, people really do love Dublin City, and they do want Dublin to be a better version of itself.
To pick up on a point that, you know, Will made about the perception that Dublin One is kind of maybe the bold child in the class, to what extent do you fear that, even as people maybe forget the events of 6 months ago or they're not forefront of their mind, the impact still lingers in terms of perception?
Yeah, look, you know, as you said, the issues aren't new, and we do need to, you know, we're not a million miles off where we need to be, but there are a number of factors that make people feel not as comfortable as they should, and, you know, there are some, you know, lingering negative perceptions. I think there's a focus on the city now. You know, we do have the task force, we do have a city coordination office which is staffed by very good people from Dublin City Council, and I think there's an opportunity to start addressing some of the issues that have perhaps held us back. And I think we do need to do that, because, you know, footfall is down, trade is challenging. But I think we're, you know, if we get, there's about three or four things, if we get those right,
What are the three or four things?
Well, one of them is, the main one, I think, is that we have a very high concentration of emergency services within the core city centre. And that, if that was working for the people who are very vulnerable, that would be one thing. But, you know, every report you read will say that that's not the best way of handling our social difficulties. And I think that needs
to
be done.
These are things like drug treatment services and homeless
emergency
services
accommodation.
And all of that.
Yeah, okay. And I think, you know, like a decluttering of those services would certainly help. I think in terms of, it's not merely an increased Garda presence. People, you know, feel that, you know, more guards and everybody's happy. But, you know, we do need to address some of those kind of fundamental concerns. I think, you know, as Will was saying, we do need investment in the public realm. It needs, you know, there are things that we can do that will make the city feel more comfortable. There's a whole discipline called SEPTED, which is about crime prevention through environmental design, and I think we do need to look at, you know, some of those things that will actually make people feel more comfortable. So there are some basic things like lighting, the kind of outdoor seating that Will has here. Those are the things that we can do that will actually make people feel more comfortable. There's low hanging fruit that I think if we grasp, people will feel that we're making progress. And I think the one thing I'm really picking up from the public is that they just want to see the beginnings of momentum. They want to see that we're moving in the right direction. And I honestly believe that if we reinstill that confidence, people do want to be positive about the city, and I think, you know, they'll come back in their droves.
So, Will, I know you've had, Richard, the first meeting of this task force, and you're sworn to secrecy on that front, but we might come back to it and talk about tangibly what it could achieve, but will, like, from your point of view, Richard talked about low-hanging fruit. What's the low-hanging fruit?
Well, if you think the new Dublin City Transport Plan that they're talking about bringing in, there's a lot of faults to it, I'm gonna admit, but there's some really good ideas of how to put new green areas in the city, if done right. Unfortunately, a lot of green areas become areas for drinking and antisocial behaviour late at night, so they have to be policed, but they have to be policed subtly. They have to be areas that people feel comfortable to go out and enjoy and relax. I remember during COVID, like Mountjoy Square used to be packed because the weather was hot, and the green itself was full of people. There was a good vibe, good feeling about that. If we get the transport plan and some of these initiatives right, it'll pull people, it'll keep people in the area, which is what's needed. If we get it wrong, it's just going to cause more problems and affect the perception of the area again.
Well, it's interesting you talk about those kind of public spaces and the fear people have sometimes about how they'll be used. Are we too risk averse on that front? And you see, this isn't just a Dublin One thing. Any local authority in the country, if there's talk about kind of a public community, somebody will put their hand up and say, oh, but young lads will drink there or something like that, as if it's a reason to not bother do anything.
No, absolutely. Look, it could be anywhere in the city, it could be anywhere in the country. It just has to be done right. We need these areas. I'm not saying we don't need them. We absolutely need them. We need them done right. Look at the Diamond Park there. It's an absolute success. The only thing they're missing is the toilet. Now, we're the public toilet now for the area, and we've kids coming in here during the summer like a revolving door. That's fine by me. Leave it the way you get
it. Set them a few fruit shoots.
Yeah, absolutely. Make a little bit of money. But look, they'll come back. Their parents will come back and copy. And people come from all over the city to go to that park. Done right, it works well. We need more of it. We need more of it dotted across the city. But we also need people to feel like it's adding value and not causing problems. There's a lot of rubbish. It needs to be cleaned up. It needs to be cleaned up quite regularly. And that's just boots on the ground. That's community. That's people coming together, making the area better together for themselves.
Well, how confident are you that that stuff might become a reality? There are lots of rhetoric after the riots, and I'm sure kind of well-meaning, all of it, but people from this part of the city and people like yourselves doing business here would have heard it all before, and we've had kind of task forces, and Kieran Mulvey had been involved with them, and we've had other initiatives, and yet here we are.
Look, we've heard it all before, but that absolutely doesn't mean it can't happen now. We want it to happen. The community wants it to happen. The community's ready for it to happen. Dublin One is a great area. I have made some seriously good friends in this area who before I would never have thought was possible. This area just wants it to thrive. And they're willing to give it a chance if everyone else gives it a chance. So let's put the initiatives in place, let's come together, and let's just start slowly by getting it right and get each piece of the puzzle right, and we can build from there. We got to protect ourselves against something like this, like 6 months ago, happening again, because that can't bring us down. The community came together, we're much stronger since it, but we just need people to come and support us and help us.
And Richard, again, I know the task force, you can't share with us the details of conversation, that will all come out in the wash. But in terms of kind of tangible things it might achieve, do you have faith now that you're involved, now that you've met once, that maybe this time will be a bit different?
But it's also, what we need to take into account is that the council have set up a city coordination office and it's staffed by very good people. And we are looking at the kind of things that Will has mentioned, so we are looking at districts that are underperforming, for example, the area around Talbot Street, and looking at how we can, how we can raise the standards and the feel of that area through environmental design. And I think, there is enormous scope for that. I think I would agree with Will, more green spaces. We need it anyway, because we're going to have heavier rainfall with climate change, etc. But I think, by being imaginative, and I'd also agree with Will, the idea that you don't do the right thing for fear that something may happen is not an excuse. We need to provide a space where people want to be, and we've done it. Like we had the trial on the other side of the city, the pedestrian trials at William Street and Drury Street. The footfall went up by about 10%. It was great to see kids running around the streets, etc. And when we had outdoor, we had temporary seating on North Earl Street again, used very constructively. We didn't have the kind of issues that people thought we would have. So I think we can get things right, and I think we just need to do the right thing for the majority of people.
Well, listen, Richard, we thank you for your time. Will, thank you as well. Richard Guiney is the CEO of Dublin Town. Will Monaghan is the owner of One Society, the restaurant here on Gardiner Street. We are coming to you live from One Society. Thank you to everybody we spoke to over the last hour, to Sayo Benicio, the hero Deliveroo driver of the day, to Siobhan Carney, a hero herself who got involved to save life and limb, Dahi DeRosha, the Lord Mayor, who talks us through his experience of those riots in the night, and Noel Wardick, the CEO from the Dublin City Community Cooperative, who gave us a real sense of some of the deprivation and the challenges that the city faces, the community and the people who live here, the people that make that community, that they have faced and continue to face. Thank you for listening.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.